so today we're going to start our real introduction to Hilchos Geirus. So let's start with the Gemara that you started with in Yevamos Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells us what happens if a ger comes to us or a goy comes to us and tells us that he would like to be Jewish. Ger shabal l'sgayer, so bizman hazeh. He comes to be megayer bizman hazeh. Omrim lo, we say to him, Mari Yisra Shabasa Liskayer, what interested you in Judaism? By the way, when you ask that question, you get very, very different answers. Sometimes it was this girl I met in college. Sometimes it was, I had one candidate said that he was a world-class boxer. He was an Olympian boxer, and then at some point he was riding a motorcycle and got into a bad accident, and he was stuck at home for like 3 months recovering from his injuries, and he started thinking about the meaning of life, and he got he bought books about different religions, and the book about Judaism that he bought was the article Siddur, and he read the prayer of Aleinu L'Shabeach, and he said, that's it, I was sold. Once I saw Aleinu, I was done. I said, most people, once they see Aleinu, they're done, he was in. So you got a lot of different answers to that question. So Ger Shabbat L'Skayer. So we tell them, Iyat Yodeya, Shei Sol B'Zman Azed, Duchuyim, Duchufim, Schufim, Mitrafim, Yisurim, Barnalein. We tell them, Shvar Tzayin Yid, it's not so possible to be a Jew, it's not so easy to be a Jew, it's difficult. There's terrible anti-Semitism, the Jewish people are held back economically and in other ways, and we're persecuted. So right away, it jumps out at you, like, why are we so negative? Right? Didn't we learn that it's geschmack to be a yid? Don't we sing that? Isn't that something that we believe? Like Ramesh Feinstein used to get so upset that people would say Shvar Tzayin Yid, that it's difficult to be a Jew, because what kind of way is that to be mechanech your children? You don't want them to grow up hearing how hard it is and difficult it is to be a Jew, because then they're going to say, what do I need this for? Right? And we believe it also. We believe that it's good to be a Jew. So the Sefer Rokeach in Simon Kofiud writes that not only that, mimanin ba'ad gimel pa'amin, that we reject him three times. We it's not just a one-time conversation where we say, things are rough. That it happens three times. It says we derive that from Naomi discouraging Rus three different times. But the entire concept of discouraging him is very difficult to understand. So it's interesting because the Gemara directly deals with this question, but yet the Beis Yosef and the Shach give like an Od Yesh Lomar, that even though the Gemara directly deals with this question, you have a second answer that's offered by the Beis Yosef, and the Shach quotes it as well. So the Shach in Sivkat and Gimel and Siman Reish Samaches in Yeredeya, which is the Siman about Geirus, the Shach writes, Shelo Yomar La'achar Mikan Ilu Yadati Lo Yisi Misgayer, that we don't want the guy to have buyer's remorse. That afterwards he's going to say, well, no one told me about the anti-Semitism. No one told me that I was going to be subject to all these hatred and all of everything that I have to put up with. Had I known that, I never would have joined the Jewish people. So we don't want him to feel later on that he was misled or that he was deceived. So we have to highlight the negative. However, that is not what the Gemara says. That's what the Shach quotes. That's what the Beis Yosef says. But the Gemara asks, "My taima." Why do we have to tell him these negative things? Why do we give him this negative report? And the Gemara says, "Di'iparish nifrosh," because we want him to have a way out, and that's fine with us. That if he chooses not to be Megayer, we'll be perfectly happy. Dam Rabbi Chelbo, why would we be perfectly happy? Because Rabbi Chelbo taught us, "Kashim gerim liyisol kesapachas," that the gerim are as bad for the Jewish people as a particular type of tzaraas, that just like a person becoming a mitzvah is a very unfortunate event in a person's life, when a ger joins the Jewish people, it is a very unfortunate event for the Jewish people. Kashim gerim liyisol kesapachas, an extremely harsh, harsh expression that Chazal have, that we prefer if he didn't convert. So the question is, how does that really answer the question? Meaning, why is Kashim Gerim Lishol Kazavan? What's so bad about Gerim? Meaning, we started by asking, why do we discourage him? We said, we discourage him because we don't want him. Okay, but why don't we want him? Why is it so bad for the Jewish people to have Gerim join our ranks? So it seems to me that there are three approaches in how to understand this, three broad approaches. There are many, many, many explanations of specifically why Kashim Gerim Lishol Kesapachas, but three broad approaches to how that explains why we discourage him, how that explains why we would tell him how difficult it is to be a Jew. One basic approach is going to be about, just to give you a little bit of a pregame of what's coming up. One basic approach is we want, what the Gemara is trying to express is that it's bad for us to have Gerim. that it's bad for the Jewish people, it's not going to end well for us when we add Gerim into our midst. A second approach is, not bad for us, bad for them. That he's going to become a Ger, it's going to be very bad for him in the long run, and therefore we try to discourage him because it could be, not that it will be, but it could be very bad for him. And a third possible approach that we'll see is, not bad for us, not bad for him, it's just part of the nature of the process of Gerus. To understand what it means to join the Jewish people is that we have to give this assessment. And that's part of the process of Gerus. So let's highlight what each of those approaches represent, or how you know, give some details to each of those approaches. So in the first approach is that we discourage him because it's not good for us. What does it mean that it's not good for us? So let's go back to that question. What does it mean, kashim gerim li Yisrael kisapachas? That gerim are bad for the Jewish people, kisapachas. So Tosfos Maseches Kiddushin Daf Ayin on Beis Dibra Maskel Kashim and Rashi suggest that because gerim don't observe mitzvot as well as they should, and we're going to learn from their bad habits. They didn't grow up with it. They're not natives to mitzvot, so they don't know how to do it right. They don't know how to, you know, there's just so many, we don't realize how educated we are. We don't realize how much we know because we grew up in a Jewish environment. But when it's all like brand new to you, it's like explaining to your grandmother how to use a computer, right? Meaning she didn't grow up with it. She has no idea. So she's, you know, when she's sending you a voice note, she thinks, you know, like she doesn't realize that, like, you know, like there are just things that aren't native to her, so she's not going to know. So when it comes to a ger, it's just the whole process, is that the whole way of living like a Jew is so foreign to him. He's not going to be a baki in kiyum mitzvos. He's going to do things not as well, and we're always a product of the people that we surround ourselves with, and therefore, if we have a bunch of gerim amongst us who don't know how to observe Torah properly, we're not going to observe Torah properly. So kashim gerim liyisrael kisapachas. Alternatively, Tosa says yesh mefarshim lefi shekol yisrael areven zebezeh. Not that we're going to learn from them, but that we're responsible for them. Meaning, building off of that same idea that they're not going to observe things properly because they're not going to know how. So one negative outcome of that is we're also going to start slipping in our observance. The second negative outcome is kol yisrael areven zebezeh. We're responsible for them. So if they fail, it's our failing. And that's not so good for the Jewish people. Then Tosfos quotes v'yesh mefarshim. Dekashim gerim liyisrael kisapachas tuvi shehizer kodesh baruch hu aleihem b'chavdal in mekomos shlo lahonos hasam v'yefshar shlo yitzarim. That it's kashim kisapachas not because of a lack of observance. They'll observe the Torah perfectly fine. That's not the problem. Problem is, you know how hard it is to live up to the expectation of what the Torah expects of us in terms of how to treat a ger. We spoke about this last night. The love you have to have for a ger, how you have to be so careful not to say anything negative and not to say anything that will upset him, or you know, anything of that nature. That's kashim gerim liyisrael kisapachas, because the expectation of us is going to be so difficult to live up to. Reminiscent of, for those who ever learned Maseches Kiddushin, the Kibbutz Avayim Sugyas, right? Who was it that said that I'm grateful not to have a father or mother because I never would have been able to live up? Abaye, right? Abaye was adopted because he was Rabbi Rechana, because he didn't have a father or mother. They died. When his father died right after he was conceived, his mother died right after he was born, so he didn't have a father or mother, and he said, I'm grateful because the expectation is so high in terms of how you're supposed to treat a father or mother that I don't know if I would have been able to live up to it. I don't know if I would have been able to handle that Nisayon. So says Tosfos, same thing with us in Gerim. We don't want Gerim because we don't know that we can withstand the Nisayon of treating a Ger properly. So it's bad for us when Gerim join Klal Yisrael because we're going to fail. And then Tosfos quotes V'yesh Mefarshim, L'fishal yedei ha-gerim Yisrael begalus. Now the reason gerim are so difficult for Klal Yisrael is because they're the reason that we're in galus. The Gemara in Pesachim Daf Pei Zayin tells us, Mipnei ma'i Yisrael mufuzarim b'chol ha-ratzos yoser misharov dikchavim. Why is it that every other nation pretty much stays in the same geographical region of the world, and Jews end up in North Africa and in South Africa and in you know, North America and South America and in Australia? Jews are all over the place. How come Jews are scattered all over the globe and everybody else pretty much stays in their own region? How did that happen? Why did that happen? Why did the Ashkacha see to it? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu see to it that we end up everywhere? So says Tosa, somewhat of a, says the Gemara rather, somewhat of like a Kabbalistic idea, Kadesh Tosva Aleim Gerim, to like gather the Nitzotzos, to gather these sparks of Jewishness from all over the place, that there are Gerim everywhere, there are potential Gerim everywhere, and we need to find them. So the Gerim are the cause of our galus, and that's why Kashim Gerim Lisol Kasapachas. Now that approach doesn't really fit with our Gemara, right? Meaning, how did Kashim Gerim Lisol Kasapachas come up in our Gemara? Why don't we just mention it? We're just Stam bad-mouthing Gerim? Why don't we mention it? What was the context?
We don't care if they don't.
Want to say again?
We don't care if they don't convert.
Yeah, but why did that come up?
Why we turn them away,
right? Why are we being so negative with them? So the Gemara answered, because they're so bad for us. Yep. So, but if the only reason they're bad for us is because we need to get them, and we they're bad for us because until we get them, we're going to be scattered all over the world. Adraba, that's not a reason to turn them away. What's that a reason to do? That's a reason to accept them as quickly as you can, because the quicker we get them all, and we gather all those nitzotzos, the quicker we'll have Gula. We'll be able to go back to one place. We'll be able to live Betach Baratzenu. And in fact, Tosfos in Maseches Kiddushin rejects this approach based on something similar. Tosfos points out that the implication of the Gemara, of our Gemara, is that Kashim Kasapachas is after they convert. That we tell them we don't want you because after you convert, you're Kashim Kasapachas. This approach says that they're Kashim Kasapachas before they convert. Because before they convert, we still need to be in Gullus in order to find them. But after they convert, then they're not Kashi Kesapachas anymore. So that's that approach is difficult. Then Tosus quotes another approach. V'arav Rabbeinu Avram Ger. So an approach from Rabbeinu Avram Ger. What do you see from that name, Rabbeinu Avram Ger?
He's a Ger.
That he's a Ger, and that a rabbi is allowed to be a Ger, or a Ger is allowed to be a rabbi, right? Which we'll have to get to that also. Right, that's a major question we have in the YU Smicha program. In any Smicha program, can you accept a ger to the Smicha program? Meaning, is a ger allowed to become a rabbi? So we'll have to discuss that. I had a guy I was interviewing for Smicha just a few weeks ago, and I always say, give me your background, tell me your life story, your siblings, whatever, like we did over here a little bit, just give me something about yourself. He's like, well, when I was 3 months old, I was left abandoned outside of an orphanage in the Ukraine. I'm like, well, I don't get that one every day. So, and he said, I grew up in Fairlawn and then Teaneck or whatever. And so I'm like, well, so I assume you had a giyur. He said, yeah, he takes out on his phone. He shows me a picture of Rabbi Yudin at his bris. He was one of the dayanim in his giyur. So I'm like, okay, that's a reliable basin. I'll take that. That's good. I asked him, did you at your bar mitzvah, when we discussed Ger Katan, we'll talk about this, I asked him at your bar mitzvah, did they offer you an out, right? By a Ger Katan, if you're Megayer a child, when he turns bar mitzvah, you're supposed to ask him if he wants in or if he wants to leave and not be a Jew. So he said he didn't think so, and he remembered learning about it in high school that he was supposed to be asked, and he said, but he did not remember anyone asking him at his bar mitzvah. But then it occurred to him that he was about to lane at his bar mitzvah. He said, I was shaking like a leaf. I was so nervous. As bar mitzvah boys get right before they lane. I've had bar mitzvah boys I've seen just totally break down and cry, in front of all their friends or whatever. Just because they're so nervous. They just don't know. They're over-emoting and they don't know how to react. So he said, I was so, so nervous. And the rabbi of the shul came up to me and he grabbed me by my shoulders and he said, do you want to be a Jew? And I said, yeah. He goes, get up there and lane. So he said, I assumed he did that with everybody. I didn't realize that was just for me. So that was how he was asked, if he wants to be a Jew. It's a question whether that, we'll have to get back to that when we discuss Ger Katan. Is that good enough? Meaning, he probably didn't realize at that moment that he could have said, no, I'm done. yarmulke drop and walk out, right? But why did I mention all of this?
Ger being rabbis.
Okay, so we are Rabbeinu Avram Ager. Right, so Rabbeinu Avram Ager gives the answer as follows. Why is the Kashim Gerim Yisrael Kasapachas? Because Gerim are so much more serious about their observance of mitzvos. They're so much more careful about the way they do mitzvos. So Kashmin Lishol Kisapachas to Mitoch Kach, Grishbarku Mazkir Vonshein Lishol, Kisha'ein Osin Mitzono. So by comparison, the rest of us look so bad. Meaning you have a ger who didn't grow up Jewish, and he's so careful that he's medaktik b'kutzel shel yud of halacha. He's so careful about every detail of a mitzvah, and we're missing zman kriya shema. We're speaking lashon hara about people who miss zman kriya shema. We're doing all sorts of things that aren't right, and we just look terrible in comparison to the gerim. However, the Meiri on that gemara. By the way, according to all of those reasons, that's all approach number one. Meaning, Kashim Gerim Yisrael Kisapachas answers the question of why do we discourage him? And the answer is because it's bad for us. Not bad for him, he'll be fine. It's bad for us. It's either going to be bad for us because Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebzen, he's not going to observe mitzvahs properly, or because we're going to learn from him when he doesn't observe mitzvahs properly, or he's going to observe mitzvahs too well, and we're going to look bad because of that. Right? All of these approaches are that in some way, it's bad for us. And that's why we discourage him. It's in our self-interest to discourage him. Because Kashim Gerim Lishol Kisapachas, in the sense that we're not going to come out okay if this guy converts, or if too many people convert. Second approach, the Meiri on that Gemara in Yevamos highlights that we're concerned not for the impact it's going to have on us, but we're concerned about whether his sincerity is really there. Whether he's really being megayer for the right reasons, whether he's really committed to the process. We're concerned me'ezes siba heim his gairim, that maybe he's being megayer for some other reason. And maybe he doesn't really plan on keeping the mitzvahs. The Meiri says that's why we discourage him, in order to push him, and make sure that he really, really wants it. Because if he doesn't really want it, it's going to be bad for him. Because he's not going to observe the mitzvahs properly. Kishabal Iskayer says the Meiri, Tzrichim anu lizar shenivdok unefashvesh be'inyanav im shum siba goremes lo lizgayer v'she'ein ikur kavanasan le'emuna. We have to see if there's some other reason. It's a girl he fell in love with. It's because he thinks he can get better jobs. He thinks he can control the media and the weather and whatever. You know, if he becomes a Jew, whatever he wants to get nice horns. Whatever his motivation is in wanting to become Jew, we're concerned that it's not because of emunah, that it's not because of absolute emunah. So we're concerned for him. It is part of the thing that we have to make sure that he's good. We have to make sure that he's really sincere. So that's approach number two. Approach number three. This is Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik had another thought as to why it is that we discourage him, and adds a lot of understanding, not only to what it means to convert, but actually to what it means to be a Jew in the first place. Maybe it's not only about discouraging him, but it's to teach him that being a Jew doesn't only mean to be committed to the Ribbono Shel Olam as an individual, to be committed to doing mitzvos, to be committed to Emunah B'Hashem, but it means that one identifies with Klal Yisrael. Being a Jew means that you're part of something much, much bigger. That you're part of the history of Klal Yisrael, you're part of the destiny of Klal Yisrael, and part of the destiny of a Jew is that we're subject to anti-Semitism. Part of the destiny of a Jew is that we're different, from all the other nations. So we explain the difficulties in order to educate him, not to discard, not because we want him to say no. See, according to both of the first two approaches, it's to get him to say no. Right, either to say no because it's bad for us, or to get him to say no in case he doesn't have full emunah, because it's going to be bad for him if he doesn't really have full emunah. Third approach is, no, we're not discouraging him because we want him to say no. We're discouraging him because we want him to understand what it means to be a Jew. And being a Jew means that you identify with the totality of Klal Yisrael. The Mesh Chachma in Parshas Bo says similarly, it says, Ki yagur itcha ger, that he should bring a Korban Pesach, the Pasuk says. So it sounds like he has to bring, the simple reading of the Pasuk sounds like that when a person converts, they have to bring in Korban Pesach. The problem is, that's certainly not true, right? You don't bring Korban Pesach when you convert. So the Medrash over there discusses, the Medrash says, and that's why the Pasuk concludes, V'haya ke'ezracha aretz, that he only brings the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach like everybody else. that you don't actually bring Korban Pesach when you convert. So says the Medrash, that from the simple reading of the Pesach, it would sound like whenever someone converts, they bring Korban Pesach. Can you imagine that? Like it's Hanukkah, and he's converting Korban Pesach. Like, what? Al matzah marim yochlu. He's getting with matzah marim. What's the hava mina? So the Mishkach says, so the Medrash tells me, no, he doesn't bring Korban Pesach. What's the hava mina? Why Korban Pesach of all Korbanos? So Rav Daniel Stein, who teaches Geirus in YU Smicha, pointed out, we're hoping to get him for a shir here. I did text him, he said he'll let me know. But he pointed out that the Meshchach would suggest, and in fact, if he converts around Pesach, the Korban Pesach actually counts as his Korban Geirus. We said there are three parts of the Geirus, right? There's Mila, there's Tvila, and there's Korban. And if he happens to convert Erev Pesach and he brings Korban Pesach, that is his Korban Gerus. What's the pshat? Why would that be so? Because the Gerus requires Mila, and there are two mitzvot saseh that are onshan kares. There are only two mitzvot saseh that you get a punishment of kares for failure to do mitzvot saseh, and they are Mila and Pesach. Why Mila and Pesach? Perhaps because the Korban Pesach relates to our national identity, to the connection to the history of the Jewish people, right? To when the nation was formed, to the history of the Jewish people, to how the Jewish people separated themselves from the Mitzrim through the Korban Pesach. And as a unit, Mila represents a personal connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That each individual has a bris mila to represent their own relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and maybe that's why the Korban Pesach there's a hava mina that every ger would bring a Korban Pesach, and Meshchachma suggests it can count as a Korban of Gerus, because the Gerus is, says Rav Soloveitchik, what the Gerus is telling him that you are not just committed to Hashem as an individual, you're part of the Jewish people. You're part of Jewish history now. You're part of Jewish destiny now. You're part of anti-Semitism now. You're part of everything. Everything that it means to be a Jew. B'chol mashmaus, in every implication of that, is part of your identity at this point. So again, to quickly review, what we said so far is that we discourage the ger. Right? The Gemara says we discourage the ger. We tell them about all the terrible things. So the Gemara wanted to know why. The Gemara said, well, kashim gerim liyusol kisapachas. So we have three approaches as to what that actually means. Why, in fact, do we discourage the ger? Actually, four approaches if you think about it. One approach was the shach who said buyer's remorse, that we're afraid he's going to just feel bad about it later, so we want to let him know everything now. Then we had the approach that kashim gerim lishol kasapachas, because it's bad for us if he converts. And that's why we want to discourage him, because it's going to be bad for us. What does it mean, bad for us? Five different pshatim and Tosfos, what it means, bad for us. He's going to be too observant, not observant enough, right? All those different explanations that we had in Tosfos is why it's bad for us. Another approach is, it's going to be bad for him if he converts, because maybe he's not as committed as he needs to be, and then he's not going to be observing the mitzvos properly, and now he's going to get punished for all the failures in his observance of mitzvos, whereas otherwise, he only would have had seven mitzvos that he had to worry about, and he would have been fine. But now, we're bringing him into a situation that he can't handle. And then the third approach, not really an explanation of the Gemara, or I guess fourth approach, not really an explanation of the Gemara, but if Soloveitchik suggests that maybe the reason we tell him all of these things about Klal Yisrael is because that is the definition of Gerus. That's what Gerus means. That Gerus means that that you're part of the Jewish people, and that would explain the connection to Korban Pesach, because Korban Pesach also is about the destiny and the history of the Jewish people, the identity of the Jewish people that he's connecting to. Good, so far so good? Yeah, okay, so that's unit one. So, okay, even if you lost me somewhere in there, new issue now. The Gemara then says, okay, so we give him all this discouragement, we tell him all these terrible things. And the Gemara says, if he says, Yodea Ani, I know all about that. I know all about anti-Semitism. I was a huge anti-Semite, you know, like I get that, right? And I want to convert anyway. Then the Gemara says, Mekablin Oso, what's the next word? Miyad. Right away, we're makabel him. The Gemara further down on Mem Zayin and Bey says, "My time, why miyad? Ashriya mitzvah lo mashinim. You don't delay in doing mitzvahs. You have an opportunity to do mitzvah. You do it now. Take care of a mitzvah right away. Ashriya mitzvah lo mashinim. What mitzvah is the Gemara referring to? Like Ashriya mitzvah lo mashinim sounds like there's a mitzvah that you're supposed to do. Sounds like there's a mitzvah to be megayer of person. Is it really a mitzvah? I mean, this is like the point of tension over here. We just got through saying that we push him away and tell him how terrible it's going to be a Jew. And then we say, oh, but do it quickly, because I'll show you mitzvah l'mashinan. So which is it, right? And what mitzvah are we even talking about? And it's the implication of the Gemara in Pesachim that we mentioned before. The Gemara in Pesachim says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us into Galus so we can find all these people and be Megayer them. We can find all those Nitzotzos and start gathering them. That makes it sound like it's like part of our job is that we're supposed to find these people, not that we're supposed to push them away. That we're supposed to find people who have, you know, this pull to join Klal Yisrael and get them in. So it sounds like there's some sort of mitzvah. Rav Yosef Engel makes this that diuk from the Gemara in Pesachim. Rav Yosef Engel has very beautiful svarim on Shas called Gilyonei Hashas, not to be confused with Gilyon Hashas. Right? Gilyonei Hashas is not in the Gemara itself. There's two volumes on all of Shas. So Rav Yosef Engel makes that diuk. And Rav Yosef Engel points you to a Rashba in Zohar HaRakia that the mitzvahi. But he acknowledges ve'eni yodea al eza mitzvah nismochosa. The Rashba says, apparently the Gemara is telling me it's a mitzvah. I just like, I'm looking at my list of Taryag and I can't figure out which mitzvah it is. I mean, which mitzvah, where? You can't just make up mitzvahs, right? Meaning, I always like to tell the story because I thought it was great. One of my talmidim, Rabbi Shai Kamenetsky. You guys know Shai Kamenetsky? So he told me that when he was taking his bechina, for why you masmidim or something like that. So, you know, you had to like sit in front of a panel of Shechter, of Tversky, or of Rosenzweig, and they ask you questions. So I think they still do it, right? Do they all three still? Rav Shechter has a tremendous talent. He has a lot of tremendous talents. But one of his many talents is that he has a way of asking questions that sound like the simplest questions in the world that you have no idea what the answer to the question is. Like, he can make it, like, he'll ask a question that will make it sound like he's asking, what's the letter after Aleph and before Gimel? And you'll be like, I don't know. You know, like, one of his go-to questions that he asks that always stumps people is, oh, that halacha that you just read in the Gemara, is that a halacha d'araisa or d'rabbanan? And like, you're just not, I know how to read the Gemara. Like, I don't know. I wasn't thinking about whether it's d'araisa or d'rabbanan. So he kept on asking Shai at every point, is that a din d'araisa or a din d'rabbanan? So Shai kept on guessing. He kept on saying d'araisa. So at some point, Rav Tversky stopped the bechina. Rav Tversky said, Shai, if you can't think of a pasuk, guess the rabbanan. For the raisa, you need a pasuk. You can't just make up a pasuk. So says Rashbates, I'm looking at my list of Taryag mitzvahs. I'm looking at my Bible at Mechamisha Chumshei Torah, and I don't see anywhere that it says that you have to bring a ger into Judaism. So what kind of mitzvah are we talking about? I'll show you mitzvah l'mashinan. So there are a number of possibilities that are suggested. Each of them are pretty weak, actually. They seem pretty weak. Tosa Rush and Shabbos Kofam Zayinim Days says, I think it was on the Maram Kolmos, Hamolas Hagerim Omer Sharki Sharm Sosu Vitzvan Lomolas Hagerim. When you do a bris mila on a ger, you say a bracha, birchas a mitzvah. Why? Ki nitztavinu lehov es hagerim v'iyav shaliyos ger below mila. Because we have a mitzvah of avas hager. You know what you need in order to fulfill the mitzvah of avas hager? A ger. If you don't have a ger, you can't fulfill the mitzvah of avas hager. He's your chafzer shal mitzvah. Right, so how are you gonna have a ger to love if you don't have a ger? So there's a mitzvah to be megayirin. It's almost like a hechsher mitzvah of avas ager to be megayirin, and that's enough to say a bracha v'sher kishonim sosav tzvanu. A little bit difficult because it's a mitzvah to love somebody who's already a ger. It doesn't mean it's a mitzvah to convert somebody. At most, it would be a hechsher mitzvah. Do you say brachos on a hechsher mitzvah? What would be an example of a hechsher mitzvah? You build the sukkah. You say bracha when you build the sukkah. Hashem kishon mitzvah. You want to live in the sukkah? No, you don't say bracha on hashem mitzvah. Maybe a shechianu and binyan sukkah. Okay, it's a big discussion. Why? But hashem mitzvah ksuva b'kra, the mitziv, and that comes to the shiltos. Okay, v'chule. Oh, so that's a question. So that's one of the rayas that it's a birchas erusin, that it's a birchas shevach vada, like the Rush, and that it's not a birchas mitzvah. Because if it's not a mitzvah, you can't have a birchas mitzvah. If it's only a hechsher mitzvah, it shouldn't be a birchas mitzvah. That's what the Rush writes in the first paragraph of Ksubis, that it must be a birchas shevach vada, right? Because you can't say a birchas mitzvah, something that's not a mitzvah. So that's difficult, but that's what Tosa Rosh says. The Bali Adav Shla Ravid, the name of the Sefer, Ravid wrote a Sefer called, there are many Ravids, first of all, there are many different Rishonim that all had the name Ravid. One of them wrote a Sefer called Balei HaNefesh. It is not a Musar Sefer, it's a Halacha Sefer, even though he called it Balei HaNefesh, so it sounds like a Musar Sefer. But in Balei HaNefesh La Ravid, in the Shara Tevila, he says that we say a bracha on Tevila Skar Katan, and he says, "Vim tomar veheichon sivanu." How? Where do we ever find that there's a mitzvah? Nive es hanefesh asher asu b'charan. Pasuk says, "Es hanefesh asher asu b'charan." What's the pasuk about? Avram Levina was Megayer. Somebody about Avram Megayer as Hanashim, Sarah Megayer as Hanashim. So if Avram Avinu did it, why? You think he wasn't doing mitzvahs his whole life? So if Avram Avinu was doing it, it must have been a great mitzvah. And therefore, that's the source for the mitzvah. No, what's the weakness in that? Why is that a mitzvah? Meaning like Avram Avinu also ate lunch every day. Does that mean that it's a mitzvah to eat lunch every day? Meaning anything that we're told that Avram Avinu did, is that a good enough way? Is that one of the mitzvahs of Torah and judgment? That we derive what a halacha is based on the fact that Avram Avinu did that activity?
Would you be able to read either
Kruvu, in what sense? So there's a question whether one could be Mekayimus of Kruvu in any way other than the natural way, right? Meaning there's a comment from Shlomo Kluger as in the beginning of Ibn Ezer, where he suggests that if a couple, let's say, is physically unable to have children, that there's a partial key in my mitzvah if they adopt a child. But that's because there's a sugya that's called Magadal Yasam 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 Besos, Kilu Yulado. But if you're not raising the ger, you're not being Magadal Yasam Beso, but maybe you're saying you're being molded, meaning that's why it's partial mitzvah. That normally when you have a child, you're doing both elements. You're bringing him into the world, and you're nurturing him and making sure that he grows up as a proper Jew. And maybe each one of those is a partial key in my mitzvah. So if you have a way of bringing someone into the world without then further nurturing him, that's a partial key in my mitzvah. Or if you nurture someone that you didn't bring into the world, that's a partial key in my mitzvah. So you're saying that's ki'ilu, you're bringing him into the world. Gesher and Skyr, Gatsu, Shalad, Dami. Interesting, I didn't see anyone that says it. Is that in Rabbi Mon's, one of his suggestions?
I didn't see it.
Okay, very, very nice idea. Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlau, in his comments on the Sefer Mitzvah, Rav Sadia Gaon, I think they say like Rav Sadia Gaon is Ki'ilu wrote a commentary and wrote footnotes in Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlau, because Rav Sadia Gaon wrote a poem. That's essentially what it's like, a 3-page poem that includes all Tayag Mitzvahs. If you get the standard edition of Rav Sadia Gaon Sefer Mitzvahs, it's 3 big fat volumes. It could have fit onto 3 pages. Why is it 3 big fat volumes? Because Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlau wrote a commentary, and the commentary is enormous. It is a giant commentary. It's like the Ritva on Yevamos, right? You ever see the Ritva on Yevamos? The Ritva wrote a little safer on Yevamos, and then someone wrote footnotes that are like tremendous. So it's like a tremendous work. So Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlau suggests that the source of the mitzvah of being Mekabel Gerim, is the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvot, Mitzvah Saseh Gimel. What does the Rambam say in Mitzvah Saseh Gimel? The Rambam describes Avas Hashem. It says, something about things that you love is that you always want to spread it to other people. So, She'eshem Shamayim Mis'ahiv Al Yadcha. The mitzvah of Avas Hashem is to love Hashem so much that you want, to the point you want others to experience Judaism and experience that same level of Ava. Meaning it's like you discovered something. Like, you discovered a deal on, Dan's Deals or something. So you want to, like, you're so excited about it, you want to share it with everybody. Or you came across, there's a restaurant, you know, where no one knows about this dish that the restaurant serves. You love it so much, you want to let everyone know, oh, you got to get that when you go there. You got to get that dish. When you really love something, you want other people to experience it also. So maybe that, says Rav Yerucham Fishel Perlau, is the mitzvah to be Mekabel Gerim. It's not the historic precedent of Avram Avinu, but it's the spreading of love of Hashem. And that's part of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. So that has to be balanced with making sure that we know that the person is sincere, of course, and that we don't go actively looking for it because of the potential lack of sincerity. But when you have a person that comes sincerely, Megayrin Osamiyad, Molin Osamiyad, do it right away. Because if you have a legitimate candidate, great, so I'm going to be able to spread the sense of Avas Hashem. Then there's a fourth approach. Fourth approach is, so far, what are the potential mitzvahs that we have? We have potentially that the mitzvah is, what was the first one we said? That we have Avas Ager, and the only way to have Avas Ager is to have a Ger. We have being like Avram Avinu, that Avraham Avinu did it, so it must be a mitzvah to do. And then we have being like Avraham Avinu, but in a different sense, in that there's a mitzvah of Avas Hashem, and part of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem is we're trying to spread that Ava to as many other people as we can. That is the fourth approach. I saw Rav Menashe Klein in his Tshuvas Mishnah Halachas. Rav Menashe Klein was a posek who died a few years ago. He was a Holocaust survivor. He was known as the Ungvar Rav, because he came from the town of Ungvar, where my grandfather's from. My grandfather's last name is also Klein, but I think half the town's last name was Klein, so I don't think we're related at all. Rav Menashe Klein was a very interesting person. His best friend in the whole, he was a very, very, I guess what you'd call very, very Haredi, with very, very strong views about a lot of things. About Israel, about America, about women, about like about a lot of things. He had very, 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 very strong views. And he wrote many, many volumes of tshuvas. Some, you know, really, really nice tshuvas. And what's interesting about him, in addition to all that, is that his very best friend in the entire world is Elie Wiesel. Very good. How'd you know that? Just happened to know that. Yeah, Elie Wiesel is best friend in the entire world, because when you go through the Holocaust with somebody, it has a way of connecting you in a way that that breaks down all other potential barriers. In fact, Elie Wiesel built his yeshiva, Menashe Klein's yeshiva. He paid for the building of... So Menashe Klein has a tshuva in Mishnah Lachos, Chilik Tez Zayin, Simon Sadi Beis. He has a correspondence with Rabbi Grubner. Who was Rabbi Grubner? Less famous than Menashe Klein. He was a rabbi in Detroit. I met him once when my wife and I first got married. We used to go to Detroit for Pesach, because my wife's aunt and uncle and grandfather, Zichron Levracha, lived in Detroit. So Rabbi Grubner Shul was like right down the block from my wife's aunt and uncle's house. So my wife's cousin said, you know, this guy's a big Talmud Chacham, and he has a sefer, you know, probably could die to talk to him and learn. So I went over to him and I asked him if I could buy his sefer, and he was so excited that I wanted to buy his sefer. He was like, he got really excited. He sat me down, he opened up the sefer with me, and he showed me Rav Moshe Feinstein's Haskama to his sefer. Look what Rav Moshe writes about me, Hagon. That's what I, you know, it was really funny. I bought the sefer, so I have a Knesset Yecheskel at home. So anyway, so Rav Grubner has a correspondence with Rav Menashe Klein, and about whether there's a mitzvah to be Megayer Geir. And he quotes a Michtam LeDavid in Yeredeus and Memdalid, that if you have a Mila Shel Yisrael, let's say a Jew needs a Bris Mila, and it's a Mila Shel Obizman, a baby's already a month old or something, and a Mila Sager, and the Moel is called to do both Brisim on the same day, the Mila of a Ger and the Mila Shel Yisrael. So the Michtam LeDavid said you do the Jew's Mila first, because that one's actually a mitzvah. So the clear implication of the Michtam LeDavid is an achron, but the clear implication is that it's not really a mitzvah to do a milas hager. So Rav Menashe Klein says that's correct. What do you do with the Gemara Shiu Mitzvah L'Mashinan? He says, no, Shiu Mitzvah L'Mashinan is the Ger's mitzvah. The Moel's mitzvah, the Basin doesn't have a mitzvah to be Megayer Gerim. The Moel doesn't have a mitzvah to be Megayer Gerim. The Ger has a mitzvah to try to join as quickly as he can. That's the mitzvah element. He flips it on its head. I mean, all the answers we're giving is why Shiu Mitzvah L'Mashinan, that's why Mekablenos L'Miyad. But maybe Mekablenos L'Miyad just to help him do his mitzvah, Shiu Mitzvah L'Mashinan, of trying to do a mitzvah as quickly as possible. Okay, so far we discussed two things today. First, we discussed why we discourage him, Kashim Gerim Nisol Kasatachas, and then we discussed the second point of introduction to the whole sugya of Gerus. We discussed, what was the second point that we discussed? What's the mitzvah of Gerus? Right? Why the Gemara refers to it as a mitzvah. So I move on to a third point. Any points, questions?
Shuhui mitzvah lo mashinan in the case of the Michtam LeDavid. Is that saying like all 606 mitzvahs that are not of the Noah? As in, he has an achrayas to not put off the performance of those mitzvahs. What mitzvah is it? Like, that's my question, I guess.
Meaning, what mitzvah is it for him to be Megayer? Right, so meaning it can't be... Right, so maybe it's Avas Hashem. Right, maybe it's Avas Hashem, because now he has all. It's going to open up the opportunity to do all these other ways of serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yeah, could be.
If the prerequisite for Geirus is Mila, Tefila, and Korban, then what mitzvah is this person who's in the middle of converting doing? I mean, there's no mitzvah. He's not a Jew yet. He hasn't done Mila.
Right, but maybe the mitzvah of trying to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam as best as he can. Right, part of the mitzvah, meaning there's certainly a mitzvah to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, so he's going to try to connect on a much higher level now.
Imagine he's the all other mitzvos that you could do now earlier, as opposed to, if he gets the milah tomorrow, then he could only build a maket tomorrow. But now that he's building his mitzvah, doing the mitzvah of milah now, he could build his maket now.
So right. I mean, it opens up the possibility of all these other mitzvahs. Yeah. So then we have this concept of Gershon Iskariot Katan Shinola Dami. So the process of Gerus is based on what historical event? What happened that taught us all the Dinim of Gerus? Maimon Har Sinai, right? That's why we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos, or one of the reasons we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos, because Rus was a famous convert, and all of the Kali Sol converted at Maimon Har Sinai. Right? The process of Gerus is derived from Maimon Har Sinai. And that helps us understand Gershon Iskariot Katan Shinola Dami, because he's no longer related to his... What does Gershon Iskariot Katan Shinola Dami really mean? He's like, he's reborn. Like Christians get reborn? Like, what does it mean that he's Katan Shinola Dami? Like, La Halacha, what does it mean? Where does the Gemara use it? You mentioned it last night. In what sense? In what halachic sense?
Arayos,
right? Meaning that technically, on a Darais level, he can marry his sister. Right? On a Darais level, he's not related to his mom anymore. Right, that's what Gershon Iskariot Katan Shinola Dami really means. That all of the people that are arayos to you, and therefore you're not allowed to marry, your sister, your mother, those kinds of things, they're not related to you anymore. And therefore, midorabbanan you're not allowed to still, but midoraisa, you're allowed to marry them. That is derived from Maimon Har Sinai also. You have to look at the Gemara over there. Krove Ha'em and Krove Av are a little bit different for a guy, right? Because by a non-Jew, there's no yichus on the father's side. All the yichus is on the mother's side. Right, because zir masusim zir masam, so it could be that he's that he never had a nisr to marry his father, you know, his relatives on his father's side. I mean, that might not have been our rayos for him in the first place. Okay, but not gonna get into that now. So the Rambam uses that concept to explain what we were discussing yesterday, which is the dinim of kibud ave'im for a ger. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamre Perakei Halacha Yud Aleph. Hager asur lekalelav va'akim ha'akum la'akoso v'yivazeyu. He can't curse or hit or be mevaze his father, his non-Jewish father. Kedei shelo yomru bo mikdusha chamur lekedusha kal. So people shouldn't think that he downgraded his level of kedusha. Sharizem mevaza aviv. Rather, what does he do? Elenoy bo miktsas kavod. He has to give a miktsas kavod to his father. So that's what we were discussing last night. What exactly that means. So we mentioned last night this tshuva from Rav Moshe. I want to get a little bit deeper into it because I think it's a fascinating topic. Rav Moshe infers from this Rambam, as we said last night, that a non-Jew is obligated in Kibbutz. A non-Jew is obligated in Kibbutz. Because otherwise, you can't say that he's coming from Kedusha. No one would say he's coming from Kedusha Chamur to Kedusha Kala by the fact that he's not honoring his parents anymore if he was never obligated to honor his parents in the first place. It must be that he was obligated to honor his parents. And if he were to stop doing that, it would look really bad. It would look like a mitzvah went away for him when he converted. And conversion is supposed to bring new mitzvahs. It's not supposed to make mitzvahs go away. Right? So Rav Moshe says, must be that a non-Jew is obligated to keep it up. There's probably one of the top 10 most famous Gemaras in Shas. I think Rabbi Rosner gives, like, to the teens a chinuch session, like the most famous Gemaras in Shas. So I'm sure this is on his list. Dama ben Nesina, one of the most famous Gemaras in Shas. Who is Dama ben Nesina? He was a Nachri Yechad ba'Ashkelon. Was it Ashkelon? I think it was Ashkelon. Right? He was this non-Jew in Ashkelon. And he honored his father beyond what anyone could imagine. Why? What happened? He was in possession of the Avnei Ha'efor, Avnei Achoshen. He had the precious gems that they needed to make the Big Day Kohen Gadol. And the Chacham were willing to pay an exorbitant sum of money to buy it from him. But his father was sleeping and they were under his pillow. I guess he was nervous that they'd get stolen. So he kept them under his pillow when he went to sleep. And he didn't wake up his father because Kibbut Av. And he gave up on that opportunity to make so much money. And I guess they found the Avanim somewhere else. They were able to find other Avanim to buy from somewhere else. So he lost out on that business deal. And as schar for that, what happened? He got a Parah Aduma. Right, every few years you see on the yeshiva world, like a Parah Aduma was born in whatever, in Lakewood or whatever, you know, until they find out that it's not really. One, they had Rabbanim come and check, like a few years ago, and they were mamish. There weren't shnei saros that weren't red. It was mamish a Parah Aduma, and they were like, everyone was really excited about it, because, like, it's a big deal, meaning how many were there in history? And then it was pregnant. It was a non-Jewish farmer. He didn't know that it's possible for paraduma if it was ever mounted by a male. So that's it, disqualified. Could not be a paraduma. Imagine you've been waiting thousands of years, pregnant. So there were people that were offering the guy who's like this non-Jewish farmer. They were offering, you know, there's kavirim and calling. So there were people offering him millions of dollars for it. And then it's pregnant. So he thought, like, even better, maybe there'll be another one. it doesn't work. So he was zochet to a paradum. Paradum is very expensive because you can't produce them. There's no factory that's going to make paradumas. Maybe now we could. We could probably genetically engineer a paradum. But they could. They can't. You know. So it was extremely expensive. That was his reward. And what does the Gemara say? Oh wow! If that's what a guy did who's not even mitzuvan, keep it aveim. Whoa, what? That's what a guy did, was what? Not even mitzuvim, kibbut aveim, kal v'chomer, the Jewish people who are mitzuvim, kibbut aveim, alachas kama v'kama, how much kibbut aveim we have to do. The Gemara is explicit that a guy is not mitzuvim, kibbut aveim. Rav Moshe didn't miss Gemaras. It's not Shaykh that Rav Moshe missed the Gemara. Certainly not that Gemara, but really any Gemara. Rav Shachter told us that he was once sitting with Rav Moshe at a chasana, and someone came over to ask Rav Moshe a shayla, and Rav Moshe got the impression that the person wasn't really asking the shayla, the person was testing him. He wanted to see if he knew. And what he was asking about was a Prima Gadim somewhere. So Rav Moshe right away answered, it's a Prima Gadim. And you know where the Prima Gadim is? In the back of the Shulchan Aruch, the really, 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 really tiny letters that go on for pages and pages and pages and pages. That's the Prima Gadim. So Rav Moshe turned to Rav Shachter afterwards. He said, he thought he was going to chat me enough in a Prima Gadim? Like, what's he thinking? The Rav Moshe knew Prima Gadim, my guy. Like, you know, he's not forgetting the Gemara about Dama ben Nesina, right? Obviously. So what's Pshat? So it could be that, of course, Rav Moshe is correct. The non-Jew is obligated to keep an aveim. But he's also not obligated to keep an aveim. Meaning, he's not obligated to keep an aveim the same way a Jew is obligated to keep an aveim. The non-Jew's obligation to keep an aveim is purely, as we said last night, Hakar Satov, because he has to have Midos Tovos. And part of Midos Tovos is to have Hakar Satov. A Jew is obligated to keep an aveim to go way beyond what Hakar Satov would dictate. What did Dama ben Nesina do? He went way beyond what Hakar Satov would dictate. In that context, we say, oh, ma, if a Nachri, who's not Mitzuvah in Kibbut Aveim, doesn't mean he's not Mitzuvah B'chlal, it means he's not Mitzuvah in that kind of Kibbut Aveim, to go beyond what Hakar Satov would dictate. So Kal V'chomer, we are obligated to go way beyond what Hakar Satov would dictate. But take a step back for a second. Why is that? Why is it that a Nachri only has to go as far as Hakar Satov goes, and we have to go further in terms of Kibbut Aveim? So there's a famous Chakira about Kibbut Aveim, and Chaschinuch raises Mitzvah Lamed Gimel. What's the famous Chakira about Kibbut Aveim? If you ever heard a shir about Kibbut Aveim, that wasn't just pure halacha, that was a little bit of lamdas. What was the Chakira in the shir about Kibbut Aveim? Is it a mitzvah? No? Ben al machaveru, or is it a mitzvah ben al makom? Which commandment is it in the 10? It's the 5th. So that's the bridge between the ben al makom and the ben al machaveru. So which is it? Is it a mitzvah ben al machaveru, or is it a mitzvah ben al makom? So Milchas Chinuch raises this subject. Why would it be ben al makom? Ooh, there are kama v'kama ma'amari chazal about that. The Gemara tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says when you mechabit av ve'eim, I consider it ki'ilu kibduni, as if you're honoring me, right? So that sounds very much ben al makomi. Gimel shutfin yesh ba'adam, there are three partners in making man, your father, your mother, and the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? That sounds ben al makom. When you honor your parents, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to live among you, that sounds like Ben al-Makom. On the other hand, Ben al-Machavera, why? Because that's the Pashtos. I mean, it's another human being, right? So honoring another human being is Ben al-Machavera, right? So it sounds like that's the Pashtos. So that's the subject of the Menachas Chinuch. By the way, L'maynaf Kamina, whether something is a mitzvah Ben al-Machavera, Ben al-Makom, is that just like something we say in Lamdas? You know, in Lamdas, a Chakir is only as good as a Nafkamina. If you don't have a Nafkamina, then the Chakir is no good. What? Mechila, right? One nafkamina might be for a bit of makom, no one could be mocha, right? If let's say you're just tired and you tell your dad, don't wake me up for Shacharis tomorrow, I'm not interested in davening tomorrow, he can't be like, okay, I'm mochel Shacharis. Like, he can't be mochel Shacharis. That's bit of makom. Only the Ribbono Shel Olam can be mochel Shacharis. But if you want to, you know, you call up your friend and say, I'm going to come, you're not feeling well, I'm going to come visit. So he could be mochel. He could say, you know, don't trouble yourself, I'm okay, I'll be fine, don't visit me. Right? He could be mochel ben al-machavero. Can a parent be mochel kibarav? Yeah, he can be mochel kibirav, right? But so that's the question. Can he be mochel kibirav because it's been on the chavero? Or can he be mochel kibirav maybe for a different reason? Because the definition of kavod is an expression, ritzono shaladam zehu kvoda. That what a person wants is, Rav Shapta used to give the example that, like, if someone would try to put on his, you know, one of his children would try to put on his shoes, and he's young and able-bodied and he doesn't have any back problems, and his kid is putting on his shoes, he's like, kick him, get him away from me, I can put on my own shoes, I don't need you to put on my shoes. That's not a cover to him if you're putting on his shoes, if he doesn't want it or he doesn't need it. But if he, so when he's mochel, he's saying that's not my ratzon, and therefore maybe it's not kibra vein b'chlam. Well, not enough community between Rav Nachman and Rav Chavero. What? By tshuva, how do you do tshuva for a mitzvah ben al makom?
Yeah, you have to ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah, for ben al makom, vidui, charata, kabbalah la'asim. How do you do tshuva ben al machveru? All those things plus, you have to ask for mechila, right? That's another nafkamina. Another nafkamina, and the other nafkamina is ben al machveru ben al makom. What? Birchas mitzvah potentially, right? There are some rishonim that that seem to say that there's no birchas mitzvah mitzvah ben al machveru. The Rashba in the Tshuva Chelek Aleph Simen Yuches seems to give specific reasons for each mitzvah ben al machaveru why there's no birchas mitzvah. So the implication is that as a rule there might be. It's just that there's, you know, that maybe he'll reject it or, you know, other particular reasons. Good. Any other nafkaminas that we're not thinking of? Tshuva bracha. Oh, kabeiros Hashem mehoncha. Kabeiros Hashem mehoncha means you have to spend money on mitzvah ben al machaveru. It could be mitzvah ben al machaveru generally you don't have to spend money on, with one major exception, tzedakah, because that's just the nature of the mitzvah. Someone texted me yesterday and asked, like, you know, there is a rule that al yivazu zeyosim chomesh, you don't have to spend 20%, more than 20% of your money on any mitzvah. So why does anyone have to have children? I mean, the mitzvah peruvu always costs more than 20% of your money. Right? Why is it that Jews have to make so much money in order to survive? Because we have kids, you know, because you have to pay tuition and kosher food for all these mouths, and, you know, clothing, and, you know, it's got to be the right clothing so they can socially fit in school, and they won't be an outcast or whatever. Okay, but maybe that's not part of the mitzvah. But, you know, you have all these expenses, so it's for sure more than 20% of your money always. I mean, maybe if you're like, I don't know, like a billionaire, it's not, you know, but generally speaking, it is. So why does anyone have to do it? So the answer is sometimes just the nature of the mitzvah. Meaning the nature of the mitzvah is that it's more than 20%. So if Hashem is giving that mitzvah, then it's an obvious exception. So too, when it comes to mitzvah ben l'chaver, generally you don't have to spend money on Bikur Chol, you don't have to spend money on Nichma Veil, you don't have to spend money on any mitzvah ben l'chaver, except for tzedakah. Why? Because that's the nature of the mitzvah. The nature of the mitzvah is that it involves money. Another nafkamina, by the way, when you do tshuva, the Rambam Hilchos Tshuva Perek Beis talks about when you do tshuva, is it helpful or appropriate to reveal the sin, to let other people know about the Avera? Rambam writes, anyone know this one? When's it helpful to let other people know that you did the Avera, and that's part of the Kapara process? Oh, so Rambam writes, Benon l'chavero, so if you sinned, Benon l'chavero, and you tell everybody that you sinned, no one's going to say, oh, I'm going to do that too. Everyone's going to say, wow, that was really bad. Like, it's unethical. But if you sin ben al makom, and you let everyone know about it, they'll be like, "Oh, all right." So I'm not the only one. That I remember, like, once when I was teaching in high school, like when the internet was first becoming like a really big thing, like many, many years ago. So I asked the guys. I said, just like between us, like, what percentage of like 11th graders are like looking at pornography on the internet? And one guy raised his hand. He said, "Rabbi, between us." 100%. So, as soon as he said that, I'm like, that was probably not the right question to ask in a public setting. Because in case anyone felt guilty about it, now he has peer support, right? Now he no longer feels guilty about it. So that was probably not a great thing to ask. Meaning, you tell someone you violate something, been on the makom, they'll be like, oh, all right, so, you know. So that's the religious standard. So you should not publicize that, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, when you do in Tshuva. There are other nafkaminas also. Okay, we're not going to get into all the nafkaminas. But anyway, so going back to this Rav Moshe, so what does Rav Moshe say when it comes to a nachri and kibra vein? The nachri is chayiv perhaps only in the bein adam l'chavero side of kibra vein, because the bein adam l'chavero side of kibra vein is based in hakaras hatov, and that's what he has to have. Beinon l'makom is like this higher level thing, that because I'm a tzaddik and I'm a Jew and I'm being raised in this way, so therefore it's, you know, I'm honoring Hashem, and that's beyond just Hakar Satov, that's beyond Beinon l'chaveira. So what a Jew has to do, a Jew's level of Kibra V'Eim, is both Beinon l'chaveira and Beinon l'makom. It comes out in Nafkamina sometimes. Let's say a parent is dead. Do you still have to honor a parent that's no longer alive? So it's a Ferish Gemara in Kiddushin. Once a parent is dead, though, it could be the nature of the mitzvah changes. Why? You don't have Beinon l'chaveira with dead people. He's no longer chaveira. But you might still have Beinon l'makom. So it could be a Nachri doesn't have to honor a dead parent. What if a parent is a Rasha? What would you say? Beinon l'chaveira, Beinon l'makom, zero, everything. The parent is a Rasha. So honoring a Rasha parent, he still brought you into this world, so Hakaras HaTov, still Beinon l'chaveira, but is that Beinon l'makom? Is that Ki'ilu Kibduni? Everything the parent does in his life is to rebel against the Ribbono Shel Olam. And you're going to honor that? That's maybe not a kavod to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It would turn out, Rav Shachta points out, there's a Gemara B'Metzia that sounds this way, that if a parent is both a Rasha and dead, then what? Then there's no mitzvah. Beinon l'chaveira goes away when he dies. Beinon l'makom goes away when he's a Rasha. If he's a dead Rasha, then there's no mitzvah whatsoever. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says in Masechta Bava Metzia that if a parent stole something, the child has no chiyuv hashava, to, even as an honor of the parent, if the parent hadn't done tshuva before he died. Because he's dead and he's a Rasha, and therefore there's no chiyuv of kavod. Right, so it chaps a bunch of nafkaminas.
Wouldn't at least some components of Beinon l'makom be subsumed under Birkas Hashem?
Some components of
Beinon l'makom. Well, Ben Noach is still going to be chayav in Birkas Hashem.
Right.
So wouldn't that be like Kilas Avayim? Wouldn't that be considered
Birkas Hashem? I don't think that's a violation. I don't think so. No, Kilu Kibduni only applies to Jews.
Okay.
I mean, for Nachri, it's pure Hakar stuff. Okay, we have to stop here. Tomorrow we'll pick up with the three parts of Gerus and which parts are Ma'akev. Okay.